Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Super Together. I'm James Cochran, and with me today is Amber Cedar of Nebraska.
No. No. Okay.
Amber Cedar, with me today is Amber Cedar, licensed professional counselor, registered yoga teacher. Is that what ROIT stands for?
Okay. Yes.
With several hundred numbers behind that. Amber, do you want to give yourself a better introduction than what I just gave you?
Well, okay. For starters, I'm from South Dakota, but you were close. I was born there. Sure. Yeah. So if you hear a Northern accent, that's what you're hearing a little bit. So obviously went to school with you, James. So graduated from UMKC. I've always been interested in the holistic approach to counseling. So using the body in therapy as a way to help healing individuals with trauma, that's my specialty. So I'm trained as a yoga teacher. I'm actually also trained as a play therapist and trained as an energy healer as well. So I've got some different modalities that I use in my therapy sessions with my clients.
Okay. I reached out to you because we go way back. And
yes.
I am interested very much in your approach because it's very different from mine. I think I would describe my approach as very head focused and yours is head plus body focused, in a way that mine probably is not. So, when we were thinking about what could we offer couples or people in relationships as they approach this, also thinking about this kind of strange time in which we find ourselves, you wanted to explore the mind body connection. So for people that are unfamiliar with kind of that, that paradigm of what is the mind body connection? Like, what's your elevator pitch for the mind and the body are more connected maybe than we give them credit for?
Yeah. So just to start out, so when I went through graduate school, I did my internship at MOXA, which is local here in Kansas City, which stands for the Metropolitan Organization to Counter Sexual Assault. So I was working with both men and women, along with children that had experienced sexual violence, and recognizing that while there are approaches like cognitive behavioral therapy, Rogerian, which is, typical like supportive talk therapy, just those treatment approaches weren't really getting to helping people heal, because a lot of times trauma, the experiences that a person is having is somatic. So they're having these body experiences. And you can heal the mind, but what we know from research done by individuals like Besser van der Kolk and some other individuals out there, that actually the body holds trauma and holds difficult experiences. And sometimes we have these reactions or responses that we don't really know where they come from or how we can actually control them. So that's why the body is a really great place to incorporate some healing in sessions with not just individuals, but couples as well.
Okay. So there is an element of this where we go through our life, we have experiences, and we can catalog those experiences in our what we think of as our mind, our brain, and we say, I had a car accident, and I can remember all the specifics of that car accident, and part of what you're describing is that in addition to the sort of the cognitive experiences associated with that memory and my experiences of it, there's a physiological experience that I'm going to hold on to as well. A tightness in my neck or something like that, if I had whiplash, or, different types of physiological sensations that are going to be attached to that cognitive experience. Is that a way of describing how someone might think about this?
Yeah, that's a really great way to describe it.
Okay. So I'm thinking about a moment like this and how couples are going to be experiencing this differently. And when I say a moment like this, I'm talking about the global pandemic that has forced much of the world into staying at home, at a minimum, not going out quite as much as they had been. And how do you see the mind-body connection shaping that as in our individual experiences, but also sort of as we engage in relationships with our partners?
Mm-hmm. So I think the biggest thing that I'm seeing as a clinician and working with my clients, and then, you know, just kind of, you know, being a part of this as well, is that while people recognize that they're safe, like I have a home, you know, majority of people, I have a home to live in, my family's here, X, Y, and Z, their bodies are not responding the same way as their brains are, meaning that there are a lot of anxieties, there's a lot of fear. So, you know, anxiety can manifest in many ways. It can be, you know, tightness in chest. It can be, you know, feeling nauseous, having digestive issues, maybe shakiness or tightness, you know, tensing in the body. So like really like holding fist, tightness in the jaw. And when you're experiencing that, you know, and you have, you know, former history of trauma, or you have, you know, any type of experiences that is going to bring up that, you know, what we call this sympathetic nervous system, which is the body's reaction to threat. Your partner may not know how to respond to you in that moment. Like you may be having a panic attack, you may be having, you know, maybe irritated, moody, things like that. And your partner's like, I don't, what's going on? Like things are fine. Why are you responding this way? And so really understanding that at times individuals may think that, you know that they're safe, but their body doesn't. Their body is, you know, reacting in a way as like, I'm being threatened. So therefore I need to keep myself safe. So that might be, you know, changing some of the reactions that you have in situations.
Yeah. It's fascinating to me to consider that disconnect as a very head focused person. I think that it would be easy for me in a context like this to say to my partner, if she was in distress, oh, it's fine. You know, you know, here are all the reasons why you're safe. And part of what I think you're pointing us to is that the reasons have very little to do with our broader experience, or at a minimum, they don't encompass the wholeness of what our experience is in those spaces. So my wife could be having experiences that are, her body is telling her that she's unsafe, which is going to lead to that, you know, sympathetic nervous system response. Mm-hmm. And all the reasoning in the world isn't going to be effective in calming that. Now, I want to make sure I heard you correctly. Are you also saying that that because of the way that our body holds on to trauma, that the same experiences that I could be having related to a sort of general lack of safety in this space could attach themselves to past experiences of trauma that I could, you know, that if I'm triggered physiologically, that physiological trigger could connect itself to unease related to past trauma?
Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of times people, unless they've done the work, you know, where they've come to see somebody like myself, or they've gone to see somebody who specializes in trauma, they don't realize that. They don't like, why are things coming up for me from my past? Why is it that I feel like I did when, you know, I was a kid or an adolescent or even a young adult? So it is, it's, you know, in the body, like the body holds on to these things. And from a evolutionary perspective, it makes sense. You know, we have these experiences, our bodies have these experiences, and they hold on to them as a way to help us survive. But now where we are as a society, we're not necessarily needing to survive. We're not running away from saber-tooth tigers and, you know, some of these other things that, you know, other, you know, communities or tribes or things like that. We're now experiencing very different threats, like, you know, what we're experiencing now. But for the most part, our bodies and actually our brains really don't know the difference. Our bodies and brains still think that, you know, we're still back way back when, because it hasn't caught up to where we are as a society and where we have evolved as humans.
Yeah. I often, I try to remind people, you know, we became who we are as the result of hundreds of millions of years of evolutionary growth. And humans, modern humans, have been around for 100,000, 150,000 mm-hmm. years or something along those lines. And even that, you know, it's just a slow process. And the world that we exist in today is relatively new, evolutionarily mm-hmm. speaking. And mm-hmm. so for us to think that our brains are going to be fully adapted to these experiences is kind of wishful thinking in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But certainly to recognize, okay, this isn't necessarily brokenness. I'm not crazy. There's not a defect in my brain. My brain is functioning exactly the way that evolution has guided my brain to operate. It is not serving me well in this moment. Here are all the ways in which it may not be productive or experientially positive, but there is something that I want to pay closer attention to if I'm going to experience more peace in this moment. So I'm thinking about the couple, because mm-hmm. I think you're describing a reality in which we are in a sort of a post-enlightenment Western culture, a lot of which is informed by just a high emphasis in rational thinking. Emotional experiences are sort of minimized. Somatic experiences are like just now being talked about mm-hmm. in the past, you know, 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so it's the truth of our experience, but we don't have a vocabulary for it, generally speaking. So I'm imagining this couple sitting on a couch, fighting with one another. And one partner says to the other, I've had a really rough day. I feel tense. I feel anxious and all those things. And then the other partner saying, well, let's think about all the reasons why that might be the case. Mm-hmm. And in the absence of finding a solution, there's just a lack of understanding. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking if you're maybe not in a clinical setting, but imagining yourself as kind of a fly on the wall, how would we help couples in those situations where they're having some of these experiences where their body is communicating a lack of ease, but their words aren't necessarily caught up? Well, what kinds of things could we offer couples that are going to increase connection and understanding?
Mm-hmm. So, and I think this is a really great question. And I think about, you know, the training I had in psychology and really just the, again, going back to the disconnect between the brain and the body. And so, you know, philosophy and, you know, some of our great thinkers have really taught us to value our cognitive thinking, our, you know, being in our, you know, our brains. And so in those moments, one of the things that, and even something I practice with my partner is asking my partner, what are you feeling in your body? Mm-hmm. What are you feeling in your body? Describe for me, you know, or, you know, because I am trained, and again, this is something I'm not expecting couples to pick up on right away, is noticing body language, you know, noticing how your partner may look different than mm-hmm. usual. Like you, if you've been with them long enough, you can probably pick up on what they look like when they're at ease versus when they're not and dis-ease, right? And so, you know, asking your partner, like, what are you feeling in your body? Like, describe it for me. And even though that is a cognitive thing, you're still, you know, getting into your body. And this mm-hmm. is a practice I do with my clients and even working with couples. I teach couples, you know, how to do this. And then if you want to take it a step further, it's rather than sitting there, I want to get the body moving. So like, let's go mm-hmm. for a walk. Let's, you know, let's go, you know, do something where we're moving our bodies to where, because one of the things that we know from research done with yoga, with individuals that have some significant trauma and even exercise modalities, that moving the body is actually one of the best ways to release trauma in the body versus actually just talking about it, because you're not really moving things. You're not moving things around, which is why it was important for me to become trained in yoga.
I don't know if you've ever watched The Office.
I love it. I'm on reruns right now.
There's in the episode where Dwight is the interim manager after Michael has left. I think that this is when it is. Kelly arrives late and he asks why. And she says, oh, well, it's very private and very medical. And then he takes his finger and he says, okay, stop me when I get to the diseased part of the body. And then he just starts to, you know, raise his finger. And so I'm wondering, as couples, I mean, again, this feels rudimentary in some ways, but it's almost like very, not all of us even have the wherewithal to say, what are you feeling in your body? Well, I don't know. I just don't feel good, you know? And instead it's like, okay, well, let's start here at your feet. What is there anything here that feels out of the ordinary? Sort of helping people guide their spotlight of attention in a way that allows them to say, you know, I can't necessarily put into words, I can't describe to you the reasoning or the cognitive process. And I may not even be very good at saying how I feel and where in my body I feel these things. But if you can help point to, okay, yeah, now that you're drawing my attention to my shoulders, I can feel that my shoulders are tight and that they're hunched up. And then what are those emotional experiences elicit? You know, what does that call me to? So yeah, I think that there is a lot of value in, you know, often when I work with couples, it's the, you know, the first feels like the first 10 sessions are just designed at increasing communication. How do we talk words at each other and do that in a way that's productive and not going to lead to conflict? And I think this is a, this is kind of like the masterclass level where it's like when words fail us because we're talking about physiological experiences that we really don't have a cultural vocabulary for, it takes a different level of intentionality and one in which we call our own attention and each other's attention to the bodily experiences that we're having, how those may be related to past traumas, but especially like what are those things telling us about our present experience and what steps can we take to encourage soothing in ourselves and soothing in each other. I think that this will be revelatory for a lot of couples because it is not, it's not something that is sort of culturally embedded in the same way that, just sort of normal rational communication is. So as you think about just a, if there was a, make sure you do this, knowing what you know about the mind and the body, the way that those things are connected, thinking about individuals and couples in this space of time. If you were going to tell people, hey, it would probably be a good idea to do this thing and to avoid doing this thing, are there things along those lines that you could point us to?
Yeah. So two things that I think are very helpful. So one of the things is breathing. So you probably hear a lot about breathing, but one of the things that's important to understand about breathing is the majority of us are chest breathers. So we're breathing, we're taking air in and our air is just sitting in our chest. And the reason for that is the sympathetic, it turns on the sympathetic nervous system. So you're taking in air as quickly as possible to get away from something, to fight, you know, it's getting the body ready. So one of the things that I teach clients to do is belly breathing, or, you know, taking air into the body and having it, and let me see if I can move my thing here, but it's just like traveling down to your belly. So you're actually taking your hands, you're putting them on your belly, and your belly should expand. So as you're taking air in, as you're inhaling, the belly will expand. And then as you exhale, the belly will contract. So that is, and you can find things on YouTube. You can find, you know, if you look up belly breathing, there's things all over the internet, but that's one of the things I teach my clients. The other thing is just actually taking your hands and putting them on your heart. So for many of us, particularly with anxiety, anxiety is a place that we hold in our chest, and from practices of yoga and energy work and things like that, the heart represents our connection to others. And so when we are feeling tightness in our chest, or we're feeling like, you know, we have the tightness in the shoulders, or we're kind of hunched over like this, we are actually disconnected from others. And so putting your hands on your heart, just breathing in and just saying, you know, I feel connected, I am safe, and just taking that full breath in, it actually helps the body naturally calm down. And it's a great practice to do with you and your partner. It's a great thing to do with your children, especially if they're feeling, you know, just, you know, all over the place and disconnected. So those are some practices that I would recommend to people that are really easy to do, and you can do them anywhere.
Yeah. It's what's interesting as you say that is some of these things, while they might feel strange and foreign to us, I think about like when my daughter is just completely overwhelmed and emotionally dysregulated and just, you know, feels out of control. One of my instinctive reaction is to put my hands on her chest, you know, just to like help her experience the sensations of breathing and sort of feel her own heartbeat. Mm-hmm. You know, she's 4 and a half and she's still, you know, she has all the permission in the world to be emotionally dysregulated. I guess we all probably do. But I think part of what we're describing is that there are ways for us to get in touch with our body, that aren't, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, doing sun salutation or, three-legged dog or, you know, those are some of the yoga poses.
I love that you know those.
So it doesn't necessarily, I mean, it could mean that eventually, but even just as simple as breathing in the ways that our bodies sort of evolved to breathe, you know, using the diaphragm, engaging our heart, that those are all really valuable ways, and encouraging our partners to do that, holding one another accountable to those types of things. So, Amber, anything else that you were, as we were thinking about this discussion, anything else that you were thinking about as, oh, I want to make sure people get this or, you know, come away with that, anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to share with folks?
You know, I just think it's really important right now during this time. You know, you may feel like you're out of control, like you feel like your body's out of control. You know, again, feel like, okay, for, you know, some of us that are fortunate enough to work from home or, you know, we have, you know, some type of stability, you know, you wonder why I still feel unsafe or I still, my body's still responding this way. And it's just, it's how our bodies were, you know, designed to react. And so it's just doing things like the belly breathing, the hands on the heart, really coming back to the body is how you can actually start acknowledging and feeling safe again. And it all starts with ourselves versus seeking it outside of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Amber, if folks have decided that I like the sound of this Amber person, how could they get in touch with you and learn more about your work?
Yeah. So I have my own website. So it's ambercedar.com and cedar is spelled S-E-A-T-E-R, not like the tree, as many people think, which I would understand why. I'm active on Instagram. So you can, I've been posting things of like journal prompts and things to do right now during this time, since some of us are not seeing clients in person. And so, you know, just being able to still connect with me. And through my website, you can email me and I have my contact info on there. And I'm currently seeing people doing video sessions, of course. And we'll try to get you in.
Awesome. Well, Amber, thanks so much for joining us today. And I think it's been really eye-opening for me, but hopefully for our listeners as well. We end by saying be well, and that's something that I encourage our guests to do. So I'll stop talking in a moment and you can encourage our audience to be well.
Yeah, everybody be well. This has been such an honor being on here.